Who's Talking on Richmond Sports Radio 910. Diehard Wahoo Frank Maloney and former UVA basketball standout Jim Hobgood break down the Cavaliers each week by bringing you inside the game and behind the scenes with all-star interviews and classic Hobbo humor. Who's Talking is brought to you by West End Orthopedic Clinic, TGI Fridays of Richmond, LeClaire Ryan Law Firm, Janie Montgomery Scott Brokerage, TheSaber.com, Virginia Athletics Foundation, LaMare Restaurant at the Jefferson Hotel, and Kelleher Heating and Air. Who's Talking is on Richmond Sports Radio 910. Here's Frank and Jim.
Good evening, Wahoo fans. This is Frank Maloney with my tall co-host, Jim Hobgood. We bring you UVA Athletics to you every Wednesday night, even when it's raining cats and dogs. We're glad that you joined us tonight.
On that tall part, you left out the extraordinarily good-looking part. But nevertheless, this is Hobbo tonight. Largely Frank will review the loss by the Wahoos down at Landshark Stadium to the University of Miami. The Hoos are now 2-3 in the ACC as they prepare to host the surprisingly tough Boston College Eagles on Saturday at Scott Stadium, 3:30 kickoff. Obviously, the Hoos need to rally quickly for a big rebound, or the season, which is not looking good, will look even worse. As usual tonight, we have some great guests lined up for the show. Former UVA legendary number 35, Bullet Bill Dudley, will join us in the first half hour. After the bottom of the hour break, we are excited to have former UVA All-American and star and my teammate and co-captain Barry Parkhill to analyze the basketball team as the basketball season gets started on Friday night. We'll now have Frank tell all of us how you can listen and follow the show.
We are streaming live on sportsradio910.com and thesaber.com. Please tell your friends out of town, and when you go on business trips, write that down. We encourage you to send questions and comments to us via email to whostalking@sportsradio910.com, or you can call in to 345-0910. Our shows are archived on thesaber.com, so you can go back and listen to everybody from Coach George Welsh or Sean Moore, any of the other notables that we've had on our show. We're also set up on Facebook, so we have a page there. Just search Who's Talking and become a fan.
Now, Mr. Maloney, let's review the game down in South Florida, which didn't go particularly well.
Well, this was definitely an example of postmortem for us tonight, because reviewing this game is going to hurt, but we're going to do it anyway. UVA was actually leading Miami 10-3 late in the first quarter when all of a sudden, boom, UVA defense just could not get off the field, and the Hoos couldn't manufacture a drive. They end up punting to number 28, and he took it to the house, and just like that, UVA was down 17-10. UVA scored on a punt block that they ran back. They trailed 24-17 at halftime. And boy, was that misleading. Time of possession in the second quarter was borderline frightening. Miami took the second half kickoff.
What is borderline frightening?
Well,
as opposed to real frightening.
It's not funny.
All right.
Miami took the second half kickoff and drove the field to take a 31-17 lead. And truly, they never looked back. One stat that just kept screaming at me throughout the second half was Virginia's inability to convert a third down. At one point, about 5 or 6 minutes into the fourth quarter, a graphic popped up on the screen saying that Virginia was 1 out of 11 on third down conversions. And to add insult to injury, that was a running play, I believe, by Rashawn Jackson. Basically, the Wahoos punted a ton of footballs and left the defense on the field forever. I think Virginia's defense was on the field, I think, for 85 or 86 plays. Virginia's offense was on the field for maybe 50-some plays. And as Clint Eastwood once said in one of his Dirty Harry films, that's just not cutting it.
Well, as you said, the 24-17 was deceptive because 10 of those points, one was the touchdown on the block kick, mm-hmm. and the other was a field goal after a turnover where the offense really didn't move the ball at all.
Right.
So the score was deceptively close at the half, which you indicated.
Well, one thing that was very impressive to me, and I hate to say it, but maybe the only time I've ever seen this in my memory, UVA blocked two punts in one game, but somehow got woodshedded. And that's, I just never seen that before. I don't think I ever remember watching a game and just not understanding how that is even possible.
Well, it's confession time for Jim. Credit Frank Maloney. He watched the whole game. Jim and my wife, Linda, left at halftime to go to the Richmond-Villanova game, so did not see the second half. But I would ask, I mean, if Virginia blocked two Miami punts and Miami had 52 points, they couldn't have punted that much. So that's pretty good ratio of blocked punts versus punts that Miami got in the air.
Right. Well, moving on from that, I think it's important to note Jameel Sewell should be getting healthy now. I noticed he did dress for the game. He was on the sidelines. He cheered his teammates. I know it had to be very painful for him not to be in the game with his fellow fourth-year and fifth-year seniors. And I'm praying that Jameel this week is starting to feel like his old self and can somehow get out on the field against Boston College because...
Well, you would think so because you got Sewell, Vic Hall, and Mikael Simpson. Certainly, they're fifth-year seniors.
Oh, yeah.
And this is not the way they wanted to end their career. They obviously wanted to have more success on the field, and they wanted to be on the field. I guess one question is Vic Hall. Why isn't he playing quarterback at this point in time?
Well, it's interesting. Coach Groh has said in interviews and after press conferences and so forth, he said that he's not going to play ping pong with Vic Hall, meaning, I think, implying that he's not going to rotate Vic back into the quarterback position, that Mark Verica and potentially Rico Smalls will play quarterback for the rest of the season. Hopefully we don't get to that situation because obviously it's very difficult to quarterback a football team in this conference in these games. It's difficult work. My thought going into Boston College is that looking ahead a little bit is we're going to see a heavy dose of the running game. If there's any rain at all, I'd be shocked if Rayshon Jackson didn't get in 25 carries or more. They've got to find a way to get Vic Hall out in space, and that's ditto is true for my man, Mikael Simpson, or Mikael as he likes to say. We've got to get those two guys out in space, and Jameel or Mark Verica have got to get them the ball out there quickly, and hopefully some of our linemen and tight ends can make some blocks and hopefully get Coulter Phillips downfield a little bit. I think Torsha is a better blocker than receiver, although he did make a very nice play or two against Duke. Coulter Phillips seemed to get open downfield, and those guys, they've got to get them involved. And Jared Green, he's got to touch the ball. He never gets the ball. I don't know how we can not get the ball to a tall, fast wide receiver who's got the lineage that he does. I'd be running two plays a quarter to him directly myself.
Well, the interesting thing is you talk about getting the ball to Simpson and Vic Hall in space. That was something they did very successfully against Indiana. Haven't been able to do it since. So I don't know if that's a question of Indiana's that bad or it's just one of those games where Virginia played particularly well, but certainly have struggled on offense mightily since the game in Charlottesville versus the Hoosiers.
Well, certainly Maryland, North Carolina and Indiana have all struggled quite a bit this year. They've some of their games have been hard luck games, kind of like Virginia's game against Duke. To me, the game was there for the taking, and maybe Virginia plays differently on the road at Miami, coming off of a big win like that. But looking at the ACC in the Coastal Division, Virginia is 2-3 along with North Carolina. Duke is at 3-2. Virginia Tech is at 3-2. Miami is surprising everybody, I think, at 4-2. And Georgia Tech obviously has got a terrific team. They're 6-1 in the conference, 9-1 overall. And obviously Georgia Tech this year is the best team in the ACC, barring some surprises in these last 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, they're the class of the conference, and they've got the game this weekend at Duke, with an opportunity to clinch the Coastal Division, and it looks certainly like it's down to Boston College and Clemson for the Atlantic Division to get to the championship game, and Clemson has the inside track if they win out in their two remaining conference games, one of which is against Virginia.
So, believe it or not, Virginia is on that is on the docket potentially to be a TV game, because that Clemson-Virginia game in
2 weeks meaningful, yeah.
Is very meaningful. So it would be nice if Virginia can somehow find a way to muster up a good showing and possibly a win against Boston College and go on the road, because you know that if they're on TV, that would be a significant TV game. So looking forward just a tad, I did hear and participate in a conference call with Matt Conrath, Virginia's defensive end, who played a significant number of downs coming back from injury this past Saturday. Also, Nate Collins, who has had an extraordinary stretch this season, last four or five games. Nate Collins has been a beast, playing everywhere from nose tackle to defensive end. This is a huge game coming up for him, and he clearly is positioning himself for the NFL. Hopefully Conrath will continue to get healthy, but both these guys talk about playing against a big offensive line that Boston College has, and clearly Virginia's got to find a way to keep Boston College from just running the ball down their throats. Steve Greer and Darren Childs and the other linebackers have to continue to step up.
Well, BC at 6-3 overall, 3-2 in the league, has had a positive season, and one that was not necessarily anticipated to have that level of success. At any rate, I think we're going to take a break in a moment, but before we do so, why don't we go ahead and have Frank go through the bio of Bullet Bill Dudley, who will be joining us when we come back from the break. Frank?
Glad to do it. It's an honor, really. Bullet Bill Dudley was born in Bluefield, Virginia, back in 1921. A group of UVA alumni in Richmond, Virginia, funded the scholarship that brought Dudley to Charlottesville. He played halfback and defensive back for UVA from 1939 to 41. By the time he was a senior and a sole lone captain of the team, he was a consensus All-American at age 19. He won numerous awards, as UVA was 8-1 his senior year. He won the Maxwell Award. He led the nation in scoring, touchdowns, and all-purpose yards, and he finished in the top five in a number of other categories. He went on to serve in the Army Air Corps in World War II. His rookie year with the Pittsburgh Steelers, he led the NFL in rushing and was named Rookie of the Year. In 1946, he was named MVP of the NFL and received the prestigious Carr Award. He later went on to play for the Lions and Redskins. He was inducted into the College Hall of Fame, the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and inducted into the Steelers Hall of Fame, the Redskins Ring of Honor, and the Virginia State Hall of Fame. Today he lives in Lynchburg, Virginia, and he still is a machine. He's the Iron Man. But we're going to head to break now, and Jonathan's going to take us out. We'll be back in a few minutes with our legendary hero, Bullet Bill Dudley.